Before I address the topic at hand, there's another age-old philosophical question that needs to be addressed. That is, how many UUs does it take to change a light bulb? We believe that incandescent, fluorescent, tinted, or energy-saving are equally valid paths to light. And if, in your journey, you have felt the need to change your light bulb, we are holding a light bulb service Wednesday night at which you are welcome to recite a poem or reading about luminescence. Now, to the task at hand. Alcohol has been present in civilization since 10,000 BC when man first planted grain. Grain fell in water and was fermented by yeast. Problem drinking has been a consistent issue since the dawn of recorded history. It has known no social boundaries, and many of the greats in history have been identified as problem drinkers. Alexander the Great was said to have made many of his decisions while drunk. Winston Churchill reportedly drank from wake up until going to sleep. Ulysses S. Grant, our 18th president, drank excessively throughout his life. Russian leaders Joseph Stalin and Boris Yeltsin were included in the list of leaders who drank heavily throughout their lives. Notably, in our recent past, such people as Stephen King, the author, who got sober in the 80s, Mickey Mantle, who later in life admitted having a severe drinking problem and playing many of his greatest games drunk, and Senator Joe McCarthy. That might explain why he was such a vile man. One of my heroes is Betty Ford, who inspired thousands of people, including me, to come to grips with their own alcoholism. The famous Betty Ford Center, built in her honor, has helped people from all walks return to a useful life. Another who gave me hope, and I might have been the only one in the world that did, was Billy Carter, brother of President Carter, who was given considerable press about his drinking, but also was given considerable press when he went to the Betty Ford Center and became sober. There is no record of an organized effort at recovery until 1840, when the Washingtonian movement was founded by six hard drinkers meeting at Chase's Tavern in Baltimore, Maryland. The idea was that relying on each other, sharing their alcoholic experiences, and relying upon divine help, they could keep sober. Total abstinence was their goal. While the temperance movement focused on the perils of alcohol in society, the Washingtonians focused on the individual alcoholic. The movement flourished and in a few short years had members numbering in the tens of thousands. However, also in the space of a few short years, this society all but disappeared because they became fragmented from their primary purpose. Now we get to the sequence of events that led to the founding of Alcoholics Anonymous. Around 1920, a man named Dr. Frank Buckman founded the Oxford Group, a Christian movement focused on what he believed to be first century Christianity. He recruited the Reverend Dr. Sam Shoemaker, who became the rector of Calvary Church in New York, the virtual American headquarters for the Oxford Group during the 30s. The group focused on the up and outers, the elites and wealthy of society. Their primary purpose was not focused on recovery from problem drinking, but their precepts had some success in helping members to stop. While there were followers worldwide, our focus is on the New York and Akron groups. In 1932 and 33, a man from Vermont, the first of the Vermont connection, named Roland Hazard, had become a hopeless alcoholic and had sought out Dr. Carl Jung for help. After spending some time with Dr. Jung, he came back to the States, thinking he had his drinking problem licked, only to find himself drunk again. Returning to Europe, Dr. Jung informed Roland that he could help him no further and that possibly a spiritual experience could be of help. Roland went to New York, found the Oxford group, and became sober by following their direction. He and two other Oxford group members went to Vermont, paid a visit to a man named Ebbie Thatcher, also a hopeless drunk, and Ebbie got sober in 1934 at Sam Shoemaker's Mission in New York. Ebbie, in turn, called on his boyhood friend from Vermont, Bill Wilson, who would become the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. The precepts the Oxford group used to aid recovery were: we admitted we were licked, we got honest with ourselves, we talked it over with another person, we made amends to those we had harmed, we tried to carry this message to others with no thought of reward, and we prayed to whatever God we thought there was. For a religious group, that was quite a statement. These became the basis of the famous 12 steps, as Bill Wilson would write them in 1938. William Griffith Wilson, Bill Wilson, and affectionately known as Bill W., at age 40 achieved sobriety on December 11, 1934, and maintained it until his death 36 years later. Bill went on to achieve success and celebrity by the accomplishments and growth of AA under his leadership. Much has been written about this visionary, charismatic, dedicated man, including numerous articles, biographies, and the famous movie My Name is Bill W., starring James Wood as Bill. His legacy today is felt in over 117,000 groups worldwide of alcoholics helping other alcoholics achieve and maintain sobriety. Bill had an unsettled and troubling childhood in Vermont. He attended the university and was inducted into the Vermont Guard. In 1917, he was commissioned an artillery officer, and while training, he had his first drink at age 22. He married Lois Burnham in 1918, and she would see him through the best of times and the horrible, horrible, horrible worst of times. At the end of World War I, he returned to New York, attended law school, but failed to pick up his diploma because he was too drunk. He achieved success on Wall Street. However, his constant drinking made doing business impossible, and his credibility and reputation was ruined. The crash of 1929 left Bill and Lois destitute, and he was unable to hold a job for 5 years, living on Lois' meager salary and help from her family. In 1933, Bill was committed to Towns Hospital in New York under the care of Dr. William Silkworth. For perhaps the first time in history, Dr. Silkworth identified alcoholism as a physical compulsion coupled with a mental obsession, and that it was a medical condition rather than a moral failing. Knowing that still didn't keep Bill sober, and he was back in Towns two more times, being told that he would either die or be locked up permanently. After the visit by Abby Thatcher and exposure to the spirituality of the Oxford group, during the four-stay at Towns, Bill had a dramatic conversion experience and never drank again. Wilson joined the Oxford group and tried to help other alcoholics, but only succeeded in keeping himself sober. And that is a key to the recovery in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. The Oxford group in Akron was comprised of many an industry, including the Firestones, Henrietta Cyberling of the Goodyear Tire family, as well as the Reverend Dr. Walter Tunks, the group's spiritual leader, and noted Akron surgeon Dr. Robert Holbrook Smith. And it's ironic to me that Dr. Bob also hailed from Vermont. So the Vermont connection is in my genes. And his wife, Anne, a friend of Mrs. Cyberling. Anne and Henrietta had been working through the group to get Dr. Smith sober, but to no avail. Try as he may, he could not stay away from a drink, and he was in jeopardy of losing his medical practice as the local hospitals were fed up with his drunken behavior. In May of 1935, Bill Wilson was in Akron trying to put together a business deal. While staying at the Mayflower Hotel, he was tempted to go into the bar, but instead consulted the church reader board in the lobby to see if he could find a drunk to work with. One by one, he called the listed churches to see if they knew of a drunk that he could come talk to, and finally reached Reverend Tunks, who most certainly did know just the man. Tunks called Henrietta Cyberling, who called Dr. Bob, and a meeting was set up the next night, May 12, 1935, at the Cyberling house. That was probably the first recorded instance where one alcoholic consciously and deliberately turned to another alcoholic not to drink with, but to stay sober with. The key to the outcome of that meeting was that one alcoholic said to a still drinking alcoholic, "This is what I did," not, "This is what you should do." After a brief spree by Dr. Bob while on a medical convention, he took his last drink on June the 10th, 1935, and that was the birth of Alcoholics Anonymous. That fateful meeting on May 12th changed history. Call it divine guidance, synchronicity, coincidence, or whatever. But there seems to me a guiding force involved. Bill and Bob set out to find a drunk to work with and carry their message, and found their man in the hospital where Dr. Bob practiced. They told their stories and outlined what they did to recover, and the third member of AA began sobriety. That same process remains key to recovery today. The fellowship began to grow slowly and painfully, with the result that millions upon millions of lives have been changed for the better. There is not time here to chronicle the almost miraculous but painful evolution of this fellowship. In 1938, Bill Wilson wrote the text Alcoholics Anonymous with input from Sam Shoemaker and the first 100 in recovery. The Big Book, as it is endearingly called, was published in 1939, and that is when AA really began to grow. Today, as AA celebrates 75 years, here is some of what has manifested as the result of that historical meeting. There are approximately 2,100,000 members in 117,000 groups in 150 countries worldwide on every continent. There have been over 30 million big books printed in English, as well as translated and published in some 58 languages. In the United States, you can find a meeting in almost every nook and cranny across this land. In the Treasure Valley, there are over 400 meetings each week. Isn't that amazing? The ripple effect has been mind-boggling. Ann Smith and Lois Wilson started Al-Anon family groups for family and friends of alcoholics using the same 12-step program. In 1952, AA granted permission to what became Narcotics Anonymous to use the Big Book and the 12 steps in their recovery program. Now, there are over 40 groups that follow suit, including overeaters, cocaine, smokers, sexaholics, gamblers, debtors, emotions, and perhaps my favorite, clutterers. Additionally, I don't know where they came up with all that. Additionally, there are 200 identified addiction programs that are loosely patterned after the 12 steps. Who knows how many millions have been positively impacted by those programs? So, what is AA? Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Like UU, it is a bottom-up organization. Our leaders are but trusted servants they do not govern. Perhaps, at least in my mind, the key to the success of this fellowship is its singleness of purpose, carrying the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. So does AA and other recovery programs work for everyone? Absolutely not. Addictions are insidious and very difficult to overcome. The Big Book says, if you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Not everyone is willing. But the Big Book also says that rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. It is estimated that 10% of the U.S. population, or approximately 30 million, are alcoholics or problem drinkers. That's frightening. As you can see, AA reaches just a small percentage of that number. At age 40, my father went to AA, was not willing to follow the path, and exercised his right to continue to drink. 7 years later, he died on a bar stool on Main Street in Boise, Idaho, a lonely, destitute, completely broken man. It is said that this disease can be passed down in families, and it sure did to me. Having been greatly affected by being raised in an alcoholic home, it was sheer insanity that I got drunk for the first time at age 14 while drinking with friends in Municipal Park. In Boise during the 50s, you could buy beer in convenience stores at age 15 and drink in the taverns at age 16. Not legally, of course. But it was a different time and a different place. I qualified to be in AA at age 17 and didn't make it till age 40. Following the lead of Betty Ford, I entered a 28-day treatment program structured around the 12 steps, chose to embrace the AA recovery program, and haven't found it necessary to take a drink since August the 14th of 1979. I have a son who was a daily drug user in his late teens and early 20s, who is now 25 years clean and sober. I have a son who died at age 34, 4 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. So the unwanted legacy continued in our family. Am I grateful to this program for giving me and my family a life that is happily and usefully whole? That would be a gross understatement. Bill Reed, in his insightful and wonderful presentation a few weeks ago, asked, were the events presented here today a disaster or a blessing? I'll echo Bill's sentiment that my life or that of my family could not be as it is today without the meeting of Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith on May the 12th, 1935. And to me, that's an overwhelming blessing.